You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frostbrewed Coors Light, made to chill. We look forward to this conversation every week as much as you guys do. We get a chance to talk some football with our buddy. You hear him on the Seahawks pregame, halftime, postgame show, and he's with us now. Paul Moyer is here. Hello, Paul.
Bob, thank you, man. I love the introduction. Makes my week.
Oh, good, man. We love having you
Stop
on.
Stop kissing so his butt, wins. Bob.
Whatever. Look, we all need a little bit of that every once in a while. Come on.
That's awesome. Hey, Paul, we were talking earlier in the show. We always get caught up in the window of a team. They've got their window is now. Russell's window is this, and this defense, their window. Where are you at with the window on Pete Carroll? Not that I think he's leaving anytime soon, but he is going to be 69 years old in September. The oldest coach in NFL history, Marv Levy, at 72. You've seen others obviously retire much younger, but he's as young as it gets for a guy of his age. But at the same time, do you expect him to coach to 75? I'm not sure what's realistic, and I'm not sure if we should be looking at, you know, how much we should appreciate just how good he's been. We talked about this, that they've never had that down year that the 49ers, the Rams, the Cardinals have all had these single-digit win years where it's three games, two games, four games, where they just tanked it. That's never happened under Pete Carroll, even when they were expected to have a year like that.
Yeah, I mean, he's had 2 7-9 years, and one of those we went to a playoff and won a playoff game. So even his worst record year was still pretty good. Look, I think his window is as long as the window is for the Seahawks and, you know, and with Russell Wilson. I think he has the energy. We already know just, you know, what's gone on this week. He's one of the great leaders of all time in the NFL. And now I don't think he'd want to go through a rebuild. You know, if all of a sudden something happened to Russell and there were some contract issues in a few years and there was a, hey, we've got to completely rebuild this team. I don't know if he'd have the energy for that. But look, age is nothing to him. You know, 75 years old, he's going to look about as old as I am. And I'm, you know, 16, 17 years younger than him. So I think the age thing is nothing to Pete. And it'll be weird to see what life is like after Pete. I'm not looking forward to it.
Yeah, me neither, Paul. And I thought of both you and Bump because you guys, your coaching background and everything. Let me ask you this. If what's more important, or if you could be one or the other, which one would you be in the NFL as a coach? A really good X's and O's guy, or a really good motivator and a really good guy, you know, as far as getting the most out of players? What do you think's more important as a coach?
Well, I think they're both important, Dave. I think it depends on what you're coaching. I think a head coach, the X's and O's, is not the most important thing. You know, it's your philosophy. It's going out and hiring really good people to coach your message along the way. You know, look, I was an assistant coach when I, you know, first got, you know, there. The X and O part, I was driven by it. I mean, I couldn't get enough of it. And I needed to, because I'm going up against guys with 20, you know, 30 years of experience. So that was, you know, that was my insecurity at that point. As you get older, and, you know, when I started coaching in high school and all those other things, you realize the X and O part is probably the least important piece. It is all about, you know, the fundamentals and teaching and trying to get the most out of guys or the best you can out of people. But I think, look, they're both important. You've got to have guys in your staff that are fantastic X and O guys, but your leader better be a great leader. And I think that's what the Seahawks have done. I mean, Pete's a smart guy. But I don't think he sits there all day long looking at the X and O's of the game. I think it's the philosophy, the game plan, all those things. So the answer is they're both important.
Moyer, what's up, baby? I miss you, man.
Bump, I miss you too, man. Good to hear your voice.
Good to hear you, man. I got a question. So I've been on the show the last, what, two or three days, and I've heard some rumblings about safety play. You know, I thought the safety play was pretty good. What are your thoughts on it, and do you feel like Marquise Blair is probably going to get a little more looks this year?
Well, I think they're going to find a way to get Marquise on the field. You know, and I don't know if that's at the safety position. I don't know if that's him battling in the nickel position at times, or they create some type of hybrid role, which we used to do way back, Dave remembers, against the run and shoot, where we'd bring an extra safety down and still play our 4-3 concepts, but we called it a 4-2
defense. That was you,
Paul. It was, and I'd like to think that worked very well. I think Marquise is a guy that you've got to get on the field because his game is solid across the board. I mean, he's a fantastic tackler. He's an intimidator. He's a guy who can create interceptions. You know, it's just when you come into this league as a rookie, there's very few rookies who excel at the whole playbook, I guess, as a quarterback and at safety. There's just so many things going on. There's so many checks. You can't have mistakes in the secondary. You can have them at linebacker at times and in the defensive line. It's exploited in the secondary. But they're going to find a way to get them on the field. And look, if you got McDougal and Diggs and they're all battling and whoever the best one is, I'm good with all three of them.
Hey, Paul, we were also talking earlier. Peter King released his power rankings, and it's just, you know, for fodder, for conversation. But he had the Seahawks ranked sixth in the league. Yeah, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers ahead of them at five, the 49ers at four, which is fine. I wouldn't put the Bucs there even with Brady and Gronk. But just looking at the NFC West, so we had number four were the 49ers, number six were the Seahawks, number 16 were the Rams, and number 18 were the Cardinals. I'd flip the Cardinals and the Rams around. I think the Rams are going to end up in last place in this division. But how do you see the West playing out, and do you feel like those rankings are representative? Are they fair?
Well, I mean, I'm shocked they've got the 49ers. He has the 49ers fourth. I mean, this team is – they're an outstanding football team. And I get – you know, they got to have some wide receivers step up, and they're going to be counting on a rookie, and they lost one of their best players on the defensive line, but I thought they replaced them with their first-round pick, the kid out of South Carolina. I think they're, you know, 1-2 in this league again. I think the Seahawks six makes sense. You know, how do you really, you know, 4-10, that's pretty hard to differentiate between those. So I think it's right for where the Seahawks, and I think the 49ers are probably a little bit lower than they should be. You know, they should be probably 2 or 3 at the least. And I think, look, the Rams, they still have the best player in football in Aaron Donald. I mean, that's a force. I think offensively they're going to struggle a little bit next year. I think people have found their recipe, and they're going to have to make some adjustments. And I agree, Bob. I think Arizona is the potential wild card there. I mean, they have a chance to be very good. I think they've done some great things in the offseason. I think Murray, just another year under the belt, is going to be that much better. I hate that they got Hopkins. I hate it. He is a fantastic wide receiver. I think they're going to be a problem. So the West is going to be the best division again in the league, and the Seahawks are going to have to deal with it.
Paul, I was asked this question by the professor on Wednesday, and kind of gave a middle of the road answer, kind of like you just did when I said pick one or the other, and you said both.
Put me in the category.
Yeah, no. I just, you know, I was asked have the Seahawks their defense gotten better, worse, or worse, and I said, well, they flatlined, basically, because you don't know, right? I mean, I know that you have a very high opinion of Dunbar, but, you know, does that, and if he plays, does that acquisition make up for, you know, not having Clowney? And, you know, because really that was like the biggest, most glaring move. Maybe you could maybe argue Bruce Irvin, but I just feel like to answer that question, you're going to have a lot of young guys, as you just mentioned, Marquise Blair, mm-hmm. LJ Collier, Cody Barton, step up. So it's just a tough one to answer.
Well, yeah, that would be my answer. It's tough. I think LJ Collier's, again, another bit of a wild card. None of us knew how hurt he was last year. That's come out. You know, he's a competitive guy. He was a very good football player in college. Why would you why would we not think he would make a huge leap this year? I think he does. And if we have a guy who, you know, can pass rush up the middle, even if it's just a bull rush, he's a strong guy and, you know, can really get the lineman, offensive lineman, you know, stepping on the toes of the quarterback. That's huge. I think we have so much depth, and we don't know what it's going to look like. We're counting on rookies, you know, coming off the edge. We're counting on second-year players that didn't get a lot of playing time last year, but they have to. And I think we talked about this maybe a week or two ago. The Seahawks could be Super Bowl contender in the Super Bowl this year if they all step up. We could miss the playoffs this year if they don't. And mainly because I think our division is that difficult. I mean, you've got to win 10 games almost now to get into the playoffs. Or, well, maybe not with the expanded playoffs. But I just think we could take a step back if those guys don't step up. But that's why you have the draft. That's why you, you know, get these guys, you know, coached up and develop them along the way. And the Seahawks have always done a great job of bringing their young guys, getting just a little playing time their rookie year, so they're not overwhelmed going into their second year. They know what at least it's like, and now you just got to let them loose and let them start making plays.
Paul, I wanted to follow up on the Cardinals with you before, but Dave ignored me. Where are you at with with their head coach? It's all right, man. I'm just giving you a hard
time.
It's
like you have Jim back here. You might as well have Jim here.
Paul, just to take you behind the scenes, we communicate by group text if we have a follow-up question, and we've got a habit of not looking at the phone when somebody wants to follow up.
Well,
so that's what that's about.
It's me and Jim. Let's just go ahead and say that. But, go ahead.
If you guys think I only charge $200 an hour, and I'm willing to get all of you in a group.
What a bargain. I think we could come up with something. Just back to the Cardinals for a quick moment. Where are you at with the head coach in Kingsbury? Are you a believer in what you saw? I mean, maybe it's hard to judge based on 1 year with a rookie quarterback, but you brought up the addition of Hopkins and Murray looks like the real deal. He looked rookie-ish at times, but, man, he looks like a threat. Their draft looked good. I mean, they just look scary. And if he's a guy you think is a really solid head coach, they're going to be the team to worry about, not the Rams and maybe eventually not the 49ers.
Well, I think I don't know how great a coach. I know he's a really good offensive coach. I mean, he's proven that. He proved that at Texas Tech. He proved that he couldn't bring a team completely together. You know, he's an 8-5 coach, you know, and that was his success for the most part. Really explosive offenses, which they had talent on defense, which means does that offense translate to the NFL? Are you always putting your defense in a tough situation? I mean, if you got to defend 85, 90 plays a game, you're not helping out the offense or the defense much. I know one thing. My wife loves him. She thinks his pad is bachelor pad and his affinity pool and his cool shoes and TV room is the best in the NFL. So if he's not a great coach, he has
very cool
model down the road.
That place looks awesome.
Yes, it does.
No. What about the no socks?
$5 million, Baja. Dave, if you can wear it or not wear it, I guess, you know, you got to do it. I mean, well, if I was
no socks
with that kind of money, I would do the same thing.
Yeah, no socks for me means stinky shoes.
Well, that's it. You can afford to buy new shoes every week, Dave. I don't think that's a problem.
Moyer, I'm going to ask you about your favorite player, Jimmy Garoppolo. Do you think that he can have the performance he had last season and get these guys over the hump? Or what do you think he needs to improve on to get these guys over the hump?
Well, I think his challenge is all the NFL has watched him this offseason. I mean, you know, that was an offense that came out of nowhere, and, you know, they were 4-12 the year before, and now they're in the Super Bowl. So you make it to the Super Bowl, everybody's looking and seeing what you do. We know his weaknesses. I mean, he cannot throw outside the numbers. And really, he's not great outside the hashes. I mean, everything is designed to come inside, easy slants, screens, all of that stuff. So I'm just not a believer in him that he can make the tough throw and the tough decisions when things are under pressure. I think he's proven that point. They're not going to win because of him, but they can win with him. And he's dangerous in their system. He's very accurate, and the ball comes out very quickly on those routes under 10 yards. It's just when things have to go past 20 yards, the deeper routes. You know, if he has to make a tight window throw under pressure, he just hasn't proven he's that guy. And I don't think they believe in him that much. We saw in the Super Bowl. I mean, they shut it down before the half. They had a chance to really put that game, you know, I don't want to say away at halftime, but hurt him. I just don't think they have the confidence that he's that guy. I think he's a don't lose it for us quarterback. And at least I'm hoping I'm right on that. Because if he all of a sudden becomes a true Pro Bowl top five quarterback, man, the 49ers are going to be awfully good for years to come.
Hey, Paul, what do you think? Russell Wilson is still a victim of being underrated by people out there. We had Kurt Warner was on with John Clayton earlier in the week, and while he was saying, you know what, maybe I haven't given Russell his proper due, and he's, you know, he's obviously an elite quarterback, but I'd like to see him be a better pocket passer, right? You know, because that's the way Kurt played, and he, you know, that was his one area of critique, thinking he could be better. And then we had Sam Monson on from Pro Football Focus, where they grade everybody, and I think he graded Russell Wilson as second or third in the league. I think it was second in the league in pocket passing. So it's like, all right, well, what do people see when they look at Russell Wilson in terms of deficiency other than he's not 6'3", 6'4"? Because it was just an odd comment from Kurt, and then you look at the numbers and they tell a completely different story.
Yeah, well, I agree. And everybody has weaknesses. Maybe, you know, Patrick Mahomes is about the only guy who doesn't. And he, you know, he's a special, special quarterback. But name me another quarterback in the league right now that you would take over Russell Wilson. And that's where I don't get it. I mean, even people have seen Aaron Rodgers has taken the step back. I mean, he's just not quite the quarterback that he was. We know, you know, that Brady and Breeze are, you know, they're in their 40s now. You can't say they are better really at much of anything over Russell Wilson. And he's been a great pocket passer. Can you imagine, though, if he actually had time? I don't understand how they don't put the value of what he does under pressure, because we have not had a good offensive line for a year. You got to go back to his rookie year and second year when we won the Super Bowl, where we had, you know, a lot of money, you know, tied up into the offensive line. That's what I'm excited about this year. If they can truly protect, and we've got the depth we need, and give him the space he needs in the pocket to throw, you know, the sky's the limit for this guy. And to me, that's what they always underestimate, is what does he do with the limited amount of time he has to throw it? And he can make every throw. He's the best or most accurate guy, maybe than outside of Patrick Mahomes, on downfield throws. He's fantastic at scrambling and getting the ball out when he needs to quick. It's hard to fault anything on Russell, but they're always going to find something. And I agree. If he was 6'3", he's the number two quarterback, or number one, him and Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, you know, if I had to take somebody other than Russell, I would take Deshaun Watson. I love that kid. I mean, he's a great leader and everything else. Hey, Paul, we've been having a lot of discussions this week about, and we haven't talked to you about this, but just the locker room and society, and how the locker room's a beautiful place and things like that. I sent a long text to Dave Craig and Jacob Green, and basically it just said, you know, I want to thank you guys for, you know, a black dude from Texas and a white dude from Wisconsin, and how you guys were such great leaders and always included everybody. And whenever it was time to go out for common karate night or camaraderie night, everybody was invited. Guys from the South, from California, guys, you know, white, black, everything. What are some of your memories of the camaraderie you felt in the locker room?
Yeah, look, I think the locker room is different. I mean, I've always felt that way. That doesn't mean that, look, there's not race issues there, but, you know, most of the dissension was offensive lineman versus defensive lineman, or wide receiver group versus the defensive back group. You know, look, it's in the locker room. I'm not talking about in the organization, some of the stuff that came out, but I'm talking about when you get in there and it's just 53 of you guys, man, it's hard to have a race issue because you're going to deal with it. Now, look, when you get outside the locker room, obviously things can happen, and certainly up from management, so I don't want to ever discount that. But, look, I also I came from a great group of guys. You know, look, my best friends are Kenny Easley, Jacob Green, Kurt Warner. You know, I mean, we hung out together. I'm also
Dave Wyman.
Dave Wyman, you know, for sure. But I was also in a group of DBs where I was the only white guy, you know, so it's different in how I perceive things and view it, right? It's just, they're my friends. It's just different. So, but I believe it's just my opinion that a locker room, man, you sort those issues out quick and everybody is included. I mean, it's just, you're with them, they're family. And so a little different than, you know, obviously the rest of the world.
Paul, we always look forward to these conversations. Great as always. We appreciate it. Stay healthy, stay safe, and we'll talk again next week.
All right, Bump, don't be a stranger. Miss you guys.
Miss you too, man.
There you go. Paul Moyer with us every week. We always look forward to those conversations. Yeah, I had to remind him you were part of his friend group there, Dave. I was trying to
thank you, Bob. I appreciate that.
Well, we referenced this when we talked to Paul. We spoke with Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus yesterday, and he said something we've heard quite often, that Russell succeeds in spite of an unfavorable offensive scheme. Is that really true? Why is that the conversation, the narrative when it comes to the Seahawks? We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and Moore. Michael Bumpus in this week for the Vacationing Jim Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It's been a popular topic, a popular opinion when it comes to the Seahawks offense, and that it's, and it's probably a little bit in line with what we talked about in Pete Carroll to open the show. And, you know, some people feeling like he's a, you know, old man offense, old school, 3 yards, cloud of dust, Chuck Knox, that whole thing. And there's an idea out there that Russell seems to excel despite what they give him offensively. And we had Sam Monson on yesterday from Pro Football Focus. Cut number three, just talking about he doesn't have the most favorable offensive system.
Then you start looking at where he targets on the field, and he's not a, you know, the beneficiary of a dink and dunk offense that some other quarterbacks are. He doesn't have, you know, the best offensive system working in his favor the way a Patrick Mahomes does with Andy Reid as the head coach. You know, Russell Wilson is just a phenomenal quarterback right now. He's elevated his game over the past 2 years to a level that he'd only ever hit in stretches before that.
So you heard that, and then one more quickly before we weigh in, Colin Cowherd, who, in my opinion, is rarely right about anything, just talking about his impression of this, of Russell having to overcome this offensive scheme.
Pete Carroll's never been known as having kind of what you would call like Kyle Shanahan offense or Andy Reid creative play designing. That's not Pete's thing, right? He hands the offense over. So I think Russell has largely outperformed the schemes. And he's got 100 touchdowns in the last 3 years. That's touchdown passes. That's 50 more than the next closest quarterback, Tom Brady.
So got two guys talking about Russell is just so good. And I appreciate, you know, Russell fans and acknowledging how great he is. And I agree. But is he doing it in spite of? Is he doing it despite this massive roadblock in front of him? Somehow he's able to put up numbers and carry this offense. And they were a top 10 offense last year in terms of points scored. And, you know, despite the limitations of the play calling.
Yeah, you know, it's funny to me. I guess I feel like some plays work, you know, and they were a very efficient offense. I mean, that's their thing. Andy Reid's an offensive-minded head coach. So is Kyle Shanahan, and Pete is a defensive coach, and they've won with that. But, you know, he's also hired Brian Schottenheimer before he had Daryl Bevel, and those guys are always going to take heat. But, you know, he said he didn't have the beneficiary, at least Sam Monson did, of the dink-and-dunk offense. They did target Chris Carson quite a bit last year, 47 times, and they wanted to get him 50 targets. So, you know, I guess I don't understand that. To me, it's very subjective, you know, and I think that Sam Monson, and because I asked him, how do you get to be a grader? How do you get to be a guy that decides whether this is a good offense or not, basically? And, you know, he said they have a whole system that they go through, and I respect that because if they're willing to put the time in. But I guess I just would say from a coach's standpoint, there's probably a lot of other things that go into it. Well, I know there are a lot of other things that go into it. And so sometimes, you know, judging those things. I mean, how many times were there – I always look at it this way, Bump. When we had breakdowns in defense and, you know, a play worked, you know, somebody on the other side would say, wow, that was a really well-designed play. And then – I would look at it as a defensive player and go, what the hell's the linebacker doing? Why did he only drop 5 yards? Why didn't he drop, you know, 10 to 12 yards and get in the passing lane? You know, so, and I saw a lot of the analysis on the, during the draft of these college players. Look at this throw that he made. And I'm sitting there looking at the linebacker going, that idiot, he sucked up on the run and then just stood there. So, you know, there's always other reasons and other things I think that you can look at. But, you know, again, I appreciate it. I'm not poo-pooing everything that, you know, Pro Football Focus does, but there is a lot of things and there's a lot of variables that go into it. And, you know, from one point you could say it's very conservative, but I think there were like 52-48 pass last year, which maybe that's not progressive enough. But I know that the two best football teams I thought in the league last year were Baltimore and San Francisco, and they both run the heck out of the ball.
Yeah, Dave, you're right. Like when a play has success, let me put it this way. Someone's always messing up, right? Whether it be on offense or defense. Yep. Somebody always makes a mistake. I've never seen just the perfect play. I've seen guys align right. I've seen guys get to their assignment. But then it's the execution. Someone's going to get beat, and someone on your side is going to beat someone, right? So that's what the stats don't really look at. You know, they just look at the start of the play as the formation, what type of play it was, and did it have any success. All the gaps are not being filled when you look at stats. You can't ignore stats, but that's how they look at things. And then I look at this Seahawk offense. How is this offense built? You know, it's two tight ends. You got a couple running backs back there, usually in a three receiver set, a lot of play action. Like, this personnel isn't made to do what the Chiefs do. They don't have a Tyreek Hill out there. There's no Sammy Watkins out there. They want to throw the ball 40 times. So there's a lot of variables that go into this, into critiquing why Russell is the way he is and why Shadi calls the game the way that he calls it. And if you look at Schottenheimer's history, this is just the type of game that he calls. You know, he's a play-action guy. He's going to take his time and set you up. I think that people fall in love with the exciting play, the big play. And let's not forget, the Seahawks do have a lot of big plays because they're going to run the ball, and then boom, take their shots. It just doesn't look like what the majority of the league looks like. I think with Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens having success, then we'll start to see a trend, right? Because it's all about trends. That's all the NFL is. It's a copycat league, and what trend is working now. So I would just be patient. You know, as a receiver, this isn't the greatest offense I would want to play in. You know, I want to play in a Chiefs offense. You know, I want to play with Kyler Murray. You know, but it's working for them. You know, it's not sexy. It's not pretty if you like throwing the football. But man, can they run the football? And can Russell be magical back there?
Well, isn't, to me, the ultimate stat in offense and defense: points allowed, points scored. Right? I mean, if you want to get into passing yards versus rushing and all that, okay, that's fine. But the ultimate stat to me for a defense is how many points are they giving up a game versus how many points is that offense scoring. And if you go back and look at them, this is a top 10 offense almost every single season under Pete Carroll. Whether you hated Daryl Bevel or loved him, this was a top 10 offense. Whether you like the coaches you've got now, it's still a top 10 offense. They were a top 10 offense last year in terms of scoring. So, you know, people look for different things. Some people want the deep ball. Well, we saw those stats that Russell was the best deep ball thrower in the league in terms of 30 yards in the air or more. He was second in terms of 20 yards in the air or more. You heard the guy there calling for a dink and dunk. That doesn't produce excitement for a lot of people. If he was piling up yards that way, people would go, well, that's boring. He's throwing 5 yard little slants, little 7 yard slant, little dump off to the running back. That's not explosive. You know, but that, in his mind, that's what he wants to see. I picture the Patriots offense with Brady. I thought they were very good at just kind of dinking and dunking their way down the field. Were they considered explosive? No, they were just efficient. They'd move the ball. But I'm just, overall, to me, the ultimate judge is how many points are they scoring? And you go back and look each season, almost without fail, I think with the exception, I can't remember if it was 17 or 16, they didn't make the top 10. That virtually every single year, this is a top 10 offense, regardless of who your offensive coordinator is and how much you dislike him.
Yeah, well, and that's what Bump said. It's so like every meeting I've ever been in that like you put an offense in or you put a defense in, this should work. Like we should stuff this for nothing, and then it just doesn't happen. That's where I get back to, you know, what coaching, good coaching is, you know, making sure that everybody's, you're getting the best out of every player. So, yeah, I mean, I understand. I think a lot of it is people start with this, that Pete is older, Pete is a run guy, and Pete is a defensive guy. So, of course, they're not going to have some kind of sophisticated offense. But, you know, I think it would be interesting to ask Russell, you know, what he would like to do. Because, and
what if he said,
I don't really understand. Yeah, I mean, then I'd be like, oh, please don't use that term. Yeah, but like, you know, we talked to Jake, and it's hard to get an answer sometimes because, you know, like Jake said, it's not necessarily about throwing more than running. But then, you know, he went on to say, well, Russ would like to, you know, throw more on first and second down. Well, that's definitely more about, you know, that's about throwing versus running. But, you know, for I think what Jake said, and I think maybe is something that that maybe we'll see a little bit more, is that he'd like the offense to run through Russ and have him make all the checks and things like Peyton Manning. I don't know if he's going to be screaming out Omaha Bump, but yeah, maybe something a little bit more like that than, you know, and Russell's more than ready for that. And so just a great football player, always prepared and everything. So yeah, those things they're great arguments though. And they're great for the pro football focus, folk that are out there, and same thing for the coaches and the players and everything. But I just remember two things, and it always I reflect back on. One is how much time the coaches put in and why they call the plays that they do. But, you know, coaches aren't perfect. They're going to, you know, sometimes panic and not get their guys in the right position and things like that. So, you know, it's just there's a lot that goes into it. I just don't think it's that simple. But, again, it's great conversation, and we have a great quarterback. And, you know, I almost feel like I'm arguing against Russell Wilson. I'm not, man. I've been a pro-Russell guy since, you know, like 2012 when people were saying bench him. So, yeah, it's just kind of a weird conversation that's happening nationally that people are kind of turning it around that, yeah, Russell's being disrespected. And not only that, they're actively subverting him with the play calling, which I just think is ridiculous.
Such a great term. Such a great one. Well, we've got a wide receiver in the house, and no, it's not me. It's Michael Bumpus. So who better to ask all of our Seahawks receiving core questions to? We're going to ask him about that. Coming up, it's Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Taking a look at the wide receiving core on this team here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. We got Michael Bumpus here, so who better to discuss this with than Bump, sitting in for the vacationing Jim Moore. And Michael, we've batted this around a bit. I think I agree with Dave that if Will Disley's healthy, he potentially could be the third receiver in terms of number of receptions or targets. Maybe it's going to be Olsen. But just if we just isolate receivers and remove tight ends from the conversation for a moment, you've got your first two, obviously. You got Tyler Lockett, you got DK Metcalf. To me, there's not an obvious third. I feel like everybody else is kind of similar, whether we don't really know what Ursua can be. I mean, he was barely out there last year. To me, David Moore is he's a guy on the roster. I don't think he's brutal. I don't think he's great. I think he's a guy. And if you look at the numbers, Philip Dorsett's the same. I know he's really fast, but you look at what he did in New England, they're kind of David Moore-esque numbers. He's kind of right in that same ballpark. Who's the third receiver? I'd love to get Josh Gordon back. That would be my hope. But just looking at who's currently on this roster, who are you looking at?
Yeah, if you look at the guys who are on the roster, it's really a battle between Philip Dorsett and David Moore for reasons that you just said, Bob. Like, their numbers are pretty much the same. And the thing about David Moore is he's still learning the position. You know, he's still learning how to move his body, how to understand the game, how to get in and out of his breaks. But Philip Dorsett is just more polished. I mean, he's ready to go. He's learned under Tom Brady for a while, and I just think he's more experienced. So if I had to choose, it'd be Philip Dorsett. Now, if Josh Gordon comes along, then we all know number 10 will probably be that number 3 receiver, or at least have the opportunity to be that number 3 receiver. But even if Josh Gordon were to come in, I think Philip Dorsett would still have an edge on him to start. But I think eventually Josh Gordon, if he proved himself, if he stayed out of trouble, if he didn't get caught up with substance and all that stuff, that could be his spot. But looking at these guys right now, I got to go with Dorsett.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Bump. As far as some of the developing wide receivers, and the guy I want to hear about is John Ursua and what you saw from him, and I think he had one catch last year. But we saw him in the preseason, and there was lots of talk about him. Who can be that really shifty, you know, almost, you know, like Doug Baldwin type of guy, either a slot guy who you're going to be able to go to on third down? Who do you see that has that besides Tyler Lockett on this roster?
Yeah, well, I like John Ursua as well. He had one catch, but it was a big catch, too. I believe it was fourth down, got him down to the one-yard line against the Niners, I believe.
But Pete was it has a little to be critical about that, too.
It has to be John Ursua. You know, I think that he can be that shifty guy. I think when I saw him play during the preseason, I saw a kid who had field awareness. I've described this catch maybe 100 times since it happened. It's just a seam route. So he's a number two receiver. That means he's the second guy from the sideline in the slot. He has a linebacker on his inside shade. They're in the zone defense. So that outside linebacker, all he's trying to do is disrupt the seam, get him off of his line. What John does a great job of, he attacks the linebacker, gets off clean, and instead of just doing what some rookies do, what some young guys do, and just fly up the field, he slows down. I forget who the quarterback was at the time. He throws a strike, hits him right in the numbers. But as soon as he catches the ball, John feels that safety coming down, makes a move, and gets an extra 5 yards. Now, when you look at it on film, you're like, okay, good throw, good move. But there's so many things that have to happen. He has to have the composure to attack the linebacker, slow down after the second level, feel the safety, make a move. A lot of things that guys take for granted. All right, so if I'm looking at the shifty guy, John Ursua, man, I've been advocating for this dude all year. I see him get on the active roster. I get excited, then my heart's broken before the game starts. Like, I'm just looking for this guy. If I see him on the sideline again with pads and a beanie on, I'm going to lose my mind because I want this guy to get a shot.
Well, let me ask you this. How important is it to have that? I mean, to me, Josh Gordon could almost be a luxury. Because if Will Dissly is healthy and you do bring in Olsen, you've got a pretty – and you obviously drafted tight ends. The tight end room feels really deep. So that may make up for a lot of what you do in the passing game. And maybe that third receiver, in terms of being a stud, becomes a luxury. Again, I would not say no to Josh Gordon. I know some would because of his history and they don't want to waste a roster spot. But I would definitely take that chance. But – How pressing is that need for that third receiver, considering what it appears they have at the tight end spot?
You know, I don't think it's super pressing, right? I think that because you have an Olsen, because you're assuming that Dissly is going to come back and be productive, you're hoping he's healthy, I don't think it's like, oh, my God, who's the third receiver going to be? Because in this offense, it's probably going to be the tight end. But when you do get in your third and longs, right, when it's an obvious passing down, you got to be able to flip the personnel and bring a receiver out there. So with the way these guys play, with the way the Seahawks offense functions, the way it flows, your third receiver is your tight end. But there are going to be times you're going to get in a third and long. You're going to get in a second long. You're going to get a penalty on first down. Things happen in a football game to where you got to be able to throw up a personnel sign and get another receiver out there. And with the option these guys have, you got a Dorsett, you got a Ursua, and you got a Moore. And I'm really looking to see what Freddie Swain does. I watch this guy play as well. He's great in the slot. So they got some options out there. But when it comes down to it, for that third receiver spot, they're going to really lean on Greg Olsen and Will Dissly.
Yeah, I think so too, and I think Dissly really means a lot if he's able to come back healthy. Now, you've probably watched this guy quite a lot at your rival school, UW. Aaron Fuller, I liked watching him play this year, Bump. I just thought, you know, he had some great catches. He's a great kid, a free agent. And, you know, can he be that guy, do you think, from what you saw from him in college anyway, that somehow makes this roster? Because, you know, like I said, and you're talking about, Bob, wide receiver, I mean, it's, you know, there's a couple of good ones, right? And then there's other guys that are just going to have to kind of fill in. I feel like he has a fairly decent shot. That's maybe a position group where, you know, there's some opportunities there for free agents.
Yeah, I really like Aaron Fuller. I think, man, I was at that Eastern Washington game when he went up and grabbed it one hand out the air. I mean, this guy definitely full of talent. Now, what hurts him is that, one, he wasn't drafted. So initially when you get into camp, he's not going to get a lot of reps. So his mentality has to be, okay, I might get 6 pass plays this whole camp or this day. In camp, I have to make the most out of every opportunity. And with the guys they have in front of them, you got a Lockett, Metcalf, Dorsey, Ursua, Moore. You bring in a Josh Gordon, that's 6 guys in front of him. I don't see the Seahawks carrying more than 5 to 6 receivers. So I think that his path is going to have to be, one, can you make tackles? Can you fly down on a kickoff team and make a tackle? Can you fly down on a punt cover team and make a tackle and gain some intrigue, right? You have to practice almost perfectly. You have to go down and do something that you haven't done in a while, which entails making tackles and making plays on special teams. And then if you don't, can you just be on the practice squad? I think worst case, he's a practice squad guy, but I also think that he's good enough to where if he does get cut and he goes to the wire and they try to get him on a practice squad situation, somebody's going to snatch him up and take a chance on him.
Yeah.
Now, if we can just get the coaching staff to quit actively subverting Russell Wilson, it'll all come together. We'll come back. We'll talk more football with the professor, John Clayton, coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more. Michael Bumpus in today on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
The learning happens every single day on this show with Bob, Dave, and Maura. And we've got a lot of learning with Michael Bumpus in the house. What did we learn today, Maura?
We learned what kind of car the Rams would be if NFL teams were cars.
This is the year McVay is going to have to do his best coaching. He had the luxury of driving a Ferrari up and down Rodeo Drive. Now he's got to get that Civic going, man. He's got to soup it up, put an engine in it, and see what he can do. You know, he's going to have to coach his butt off. So
I can see Honda Civic
flipping for sure. Probably not a Honda. We'll give him like an Accord. You know, we'll give him an Accord.
Okay.
Bumper, are you more of a Honda Civic guy or a Maserati guy?
I'm a Honda Civic, man. I'm a, you know, buy it stock, put some rims on it, put a system in it, change the engine, get an exhaust pipe on there, a performance exhaust pipe, and keep it moving.
I love it. The Civic. That's
all right.
Great.
Everybody here, what car would you be if you were a car? I would be an F-150 pickup truck, but it'd be broken down and old with dents in it and scratches. How about you guys?
Go ahead, Bob.
Man, I would be, what would I be? I'd be a, shucks, that's a tough one. I'd be a Suburban, you know, just kind of wide.
I haven't heard anybody use the word shucks in a long time, man. That was awesome.
Yeah, I'm a Bourbon, man. I'm Suburban.
Suburban,
yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead, Maura.
Oh, man, I am not a car person. I would just say, I guess, something reliable.
So like you're like a K-car.
Yeah.
Like a Ford K-car?
There you go.
Just a four-door sedan, reliable, nothing fancy.
Yeah, just simple.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going along those lines as well. I probably would have said the Accord. You can sort of rely on it. It's dependable. It's not just super flashy. It's not, you know, it's not the beater car. Just something you can sort of count on.
I don't know, Bob. I see you as the those new electric cars. that they that they have now?
The Tesla?
What are those? The Tesla? Because it's clean and efficient and always like the always well groomed, very just everything very snappy, never makes a mistake, doesn't burn stinky oil or gas or anything like that. Bob's a
I'll
Tesla.
Take it.
I'll take it.
As far as the well-groomed, though, you haven't seen me through this whole virus thing, Dave. So that part's a little bit out the window. But that'll change once
hair?
We get back in studio. I've got fluffy hair is what I've got.
Wow.
Fluffy.
Yeah. I look
you
like a
giant. Save that for
mushroom.
Us so we can see it.
Yeah. I'll document it before I let the girlfriend shave it off again. what else did we learn, Maura?
I like that there's no sports cars on this show. We learned that we let the listeners in on our primitive way of communicating during social distancing.
Paul, I wanted to follow up on the Cardinals with you before, but Dave ignored me. Where are you at with with their head coach? It's all right, man. I'm just giving you a hard
time.
It's
like you have Jim back here. You might as well have Jim here.
Paul, just to take you behind the scenes, we communicate by group text if we have a follow-up question, and we've got a habit of not looking at the phone when somebody wants to follow up.
Well,
so that's,
who's
that,
we?
That's what that's about.
It's me and Jim. Let's just go ahead and say that. Go ahead.
If you guys think I only charge $200 an hour, and I'm willing to get all of you in a group.
What a bargain. I think we could come up with something.
I threw Dave under the bus there. That wasn't cool. I apologize, Dave.
Well, I hate when I screw that up, you know, and when I'm asking Jim and he doesn't respond, I get really frustrated. And then when I do it, I'm just like, oh, man, what a hypocrite I am. I hate that.
Let's be honest. Most of the time it's Jim who's not looking at his phone and we're both going, Jim, 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 Jim. Yeah, usually it doesn't get a response until three questions later. But oh, well, what else did we learn?
We learned Shannon gave us the old no comment when we asked her about Jim's absence.
But right now we talk some baseball with our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher, who may be relieved to know that Jim Moore is on vacation this week. We got Michael Bumpus here, Shannon.
It is always good to have Michael Bumpus there. I won't say much about the others.
Okay. Some things are just better left unsaid. I get it.
How about that? Didn't even say his name. I'll just not say anything about the other.
My two favorite things, interaction-wise, between those two. One time we interviewed Shannon, and her face was hitting a button on the phone, so it was beeping. And people were texting in, what's with the beeping? And at the end, after we let Shannon go, I think I was running the show, and Jim says to everybody on the air, he says, what was more annoying, the beeping or Shannon herself? And then, So then a few weeks later, a few months, whenever, Jim asked her on air, Shannon, you blocked me on Twitter. Why? And she gave the most beautifully perfect, succinct answer. She said, I had had enough. I thought that was perfectly phrased. That sums up the Jim Moore, Shannon Dreher relationship right there.
Yeah, it's always entertaining, Bump, to see those two interact. You never know which way it's going to go.
Oh, and also Bump learned another little intricacy of the show today, that Paul Moyer puts an extra N in the word different, and he says different. And today he said differentiate or something like that. And I told Bump on text, I'm like, there's no way you're gonna unhear that now. You're going to hear it all the time now.
I'm all over it now. I'm on high alert. Can't wait.
Dave has a knack for pointing those out, because we had another guest, and I'm not going to say names, who pronounced certain words a different
utter,
way. That,
together.
For whatever
letter,
reason.
Letter or not.
Other than that, it just, I don't know how I never noticed it, and Dave would text me as we were speaking to him, and then all of a sudden I heard it, and then I couldn't not hear it anymore. It was just, it was glaring, and I couldn't figure out how I missed it.
I don't know what that is, because like Clayton in the very early days, I used to, when we had Clayton, I would count the number of let's put it this ways. And yeah. You know, I was the,
but
the
also
guy that kind of kept track of that. Yeah, and then that one came up too. So, yeah, so I don't know. Maybe I should be actually listening to the content and not picking apart the way they say things.
He's just, it's just natural. You got an ear for it, I guess. Did we learn anything else, Maura?
Everybody's got a special talent.
We learned so much, but that's all we have time for.
Okay. All right. Good stuff again today. I want to thank our guests, Shannon Dreyer, John Clayton, and Paul Moyer. Really good stuff out of them. Once again, great stuff out of the texters. Not trying to pander, just a couple of good days of some good conversation back and forth with the texters. So we appreciate you guys. If you missed any of today's show, head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Click the podcast button, then click on our picture. Everything you missed is waiting for you there each and every day. We'll be back tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and Moore, with Michael Bumpus sitting in for one more day on 710 ESPN Seattle.